language has also been put in the bill that's in the Senate. I would ask Mr. Martin to explain the amendment.
Mr. Martin, if you could identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I'm Larry Martin from the staff of the Pension Commission. The A1 amendment relates to the MSRS correctional plan. This is the plan that covers a significant number of people at the various prisons. It also covers a number of DHS human services employees in the sexual offender program, the security hospital, and the former Minnesota Extended Treatment Options Program. And the amendment relates to the Minnesota Extended Treatment Options Program. This is a program up at Cambridge for troubled, developmentally disabled youth. The program has gone through a significant change, as we understand it, in December under a federal court settlement. The program was replaced or renamed or disestablished. And in the Pension Commission's bill that you have before you, we essentially had a placeholder provision for whenever DHS resolved how they were going to go forward with the MITO program. Now they've resolved that, and so this replaces that placeholder language with the actual designation of the new program.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. So Representative Lanning has moved the A1 amendment to get the bill into the form he would like. Is there any discussion to the amendment? A1 amendment being before us, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Lanning, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The Pension Commission, the current membership, was officially set in motion back about May 1st of last year, and given the limited amount of time we had, we weren't able to put together an extensive omnibus bill. Nonetheless, in that bill last year, we solved a problem that had been going on for about 10 years by having the Minneapolis Police and Fire merger with PERA. Because we had limited time, we felt that the commission needed some extensive work during the interim, talking more fully about pension issues. And so last fall, we had 3 2-day meetings, a total of 6 days of meetings, studying all kinds of issues. And the one thing that I would note is that the commission reaffirmed the fact that the 2010 reform, chaired by Representative Murphy, was in fact working well, trying to correct some things with regard to our pension system. And it's the reform of 2010 has resulted in nearly $6 billion of projected savings to the funds, which is a very significant achievement. And in looking at what other potential reform issues we needed to address as a commission, a couple of things in particular came to light. One had to do with the assumed rate of return that all of our pension funds are using, on which they make their promises for benefits down the road. Minnesota currently has the highest, among the highest, assumed rate of return of pension funds in the country. There are 9 funds that are at that level around the country. 4 of those are Minnesota funds.
What are you doing?
And we had a real concern about whether that, in fact, was an appropriate level. And so I'll say more about that in a moment. Secondly, there was interest in studying the whole issue of defined benefit and how that was working, whether or not we needed to look at any adjustments involving at least some defined contribution. The conclusion was that the defined benefit system, in fact, is working well for Minnesota, but that we need further work on the defined contribution alternative. We weren't able to come to an agreement on what defined contribution elements there might need to be in this bill. That's something that we continue to need to address. During the session now, we've been meeting weekly, and as a result, the bill you have before you has three significant reforms. The first is that we're recommending that the 8.5% assumed rate of return, which has been in effect since 1989, should go down to 8%. And then over the next 5 years, all of the funds should be doing an experience study through the actuarials to determine the appropriateness of the assumptions that we have in our system. And then after 5 years, it would go back to 8.5%, unless at that time the legislature felt that the experience studies were such that we needed to make further adjustments going forward from that point. The this change in the assumed rate of return, I want to emphasize, does not change any benefits. No benefits are changed. It doesn't change any contributions, raise any contributions either by employers or employees. And one of the this change by lowering the assumed rate of return will have a slight impact on raising unfunded liabilities, which may prove to be an important issue that the legislature will have to address in the future. The second major reform in this bill is the Article 2, which deals with transparency. It was felt that we needed better information and access to the general public and to all who are concerned about what's really happening with our pension funds. And so this bill that's before you requires MMB to do a report on budgeted and forecasted defined benefits contribution requirements. And we feel that this is an important move in making sure that people are clear as to what is really going on with our pension funds and have the information that they need. The third significant reform is finally, after years of merging independent funds into PERA, last year we did the Minneapolis Police and Fire. We only had two left, and that's the Fairmont Police Relief and the Virginia Fire. The last two independent funds are now, we're recommending, be merged into PERA. Now, the bill also has a number of technical fixes, things that the various funds have requested of us that we've incorporated. And there are nine individual members of the House who have provisions in the bill. Next, Mr. Chairman and members, I would ask Mr. Martin to talk about the fiscal impact of this bill.
Mr. Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. Looking at the items that might be of concern to this committee, which have some financial impact, unlike many omnibus pension bills in the past, this has relatively few. Representative Lanning has talked briefly about the interest rate change. This does not change actual contributions. This recognizes, because it's using a lower discount rate, more liability in our public pension plans. So one would expect, at least for the period of the five-year reduction in the interest rate assumption, that liabilities will be, the recognized liabilities of our pension plans will be somewhat larger, and their funding condition will be somewhat altered adversely from what they are currently. Representative Lanning also has talked about another item of some very nominal fiscal concern, which is the reporting that's required every other year by Minnesota Management and Budget on contribution requirements and contributions are provided to our various public pension plans. Most of this information is already generated. It's just in disparate places, and this is more an aggregation project than it is a new set of duties. Also, of some nominal fiscal concern in Article 8 relating to TRA, the various state aid programs that related to the former Minneapolis teacher pension plan. This was consolidated into TRA in 2006 are aggregated into one spot, and there was some clarification of the our recovery of unpaid or late paid contributions from the Minneapolis School District or the City of Minneapolis for the future. So there's some cleaning up more than there is alteration in those provisions. And then finally, with respect to the two merged pension plans, the Virginia Fire Plan and the Fairmont Police Plan, those are going into the PERA Police and Fire Plan. Those plans are very close to being fully funded. There are requirements for the cities involved, since these plans only cover our retired members, to pay any unfunded pension liability to PERA Police and Fire, if there is any. So there is no adverse financial impact to the pension plan as a consequence of those two mergers. I can go through the other non-financial aspects of the bill if you have any questions about those. Otherwise, I can stop at this point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Martin. Maybe we'll defer to questions. And just for those who are getting to the room, when we came to order, I mentioned that we were not going to be taking up House File 322, the Scott bill, or House File 2340, the Holberg bill. So we have before us right now the 2199 pension bill from Representative Lanning. Members, any discussion, questions? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I have something I'd like to hand out on public finance.
Pages can tend
ratings.
To
ratings.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
that. I have something to hand out. Chart. Okay. Could you please give it to the author?
Representative Kahn.
First of all, let me say something. And as you know, Mr. Chairman, I don't like Republicans all that well, and I don't compliment them very often. But I must have to say that Representative Lanning was a superb chair of the Pension Commission and did a fabulous job of taking contentious people that can be at each other's throats and bringing them together very, very well. So this bill is really a total credit to him. But so that's the last nice thing I'll say for the week. Anyway,
almost over, Representative Kahn.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the things when we look about debt in the state and we look about pension problems and we hear some of the awful pension problems that some of the East Coast cities have, like I guess I was hearing, most of Rhode Island is currently underwater. What I've passed out is something, Fitch Ratings. Fitch is one of the big public finance groups, kind of like Moody and Standard & Poor's and those guys. But anyway, last week the Fitch Financial Services did a report which showed that, one, if you look at where Minnesota is, look at Minnesota on this list. The one thing is that you don't have to look at just pensions. What you want to look at is their debt per capita and income. And if you look at Minnesota, it's very low in debt per capita and per income. And to this you add both bonded debt and pension debt. And so it's 2.9% of personal income compared to 3.1% nationally. So we're below the national average there. And our pension unfunded liability is 1.6% of personal income, which is adjusted. And this is when they adjust all interest assumptions to 7% so that you're not comparing apples to oranges. And so this 1.6% compares to 3.7% nationally. And so combined, that's the pension, and combined Minnesota's bonded debt and pension unfunded liability is 4.6% compared to 6.9% nationally. And so we rank 10th lowest as percent of personal income. So we're in really very good shape compared to nationally, and I think I have the full report at my, I just passed out this, which is the summary of the ratings, but if anyone is interested, I do have the full report at my desk on the floor. and you can get copies of it and so forth. So just to put in perspective that we really don't have very much to worry about with our pension funds, that they're doing well. There are some changes I'd like to see made and probably some changes other people would like to see made, but we don't have to rush to do them. And this experience study that we're doing in this bill is going to really be very, very good to have us acting not out of emotion but on some facts.
Thank you, Representative Cotton. Representative Kiffmeyer, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's important to realize that even in saying so, Representative Kahn, as far as this list is concerned, our pension funds here in Minnesota do have a significant unfunded liability yet. So being 10 in this ranking still gives great pause for concern. But I have a question for Representative Lanning. Representative Lanning, Dr. Stinson recommended 8% to go down to 8%. And have that be permanent. The two large funds also recommended by vote of their board 8% going forward. TRA recommended 10 years at 8% and then up. There was another proposal to gradually step down from 8.5% to 8% on a more gradual basis, but now we're ending up with 5 years, and that's temporary, and then it goes back up to 8.5%. So it seemed like all of the others were making recommendations for everything above 10 years or 8% or so on, but what we're seeing here today is just a 5-year. So maybe you can explain the thinking behind that, if you could, please.
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Kiffmeyer, we're recommending 8%. And we're also recommending that experience studies, as I mentioned, be conducted on all the funds during this next 5-year period of time so that we know what our experience has been, so the legislature can be informed as to whether or not the assumptions that we're operating under for the next 5 years prove to be good assumptions or not. And if they prove not to be good assumptions, even though this bill says after 5 years it would go back up to 8.5%, the legislature could say, no, we don't think we could or should go back up to 8.5%. The other thing I would say is, members, this is a compromise. This is a bipartisan compromise, and there were plenty of voices who didn't want any change at all in the assumed rate of return. All of the various employee groups didn't want to see any change. They testified, let's not make the change, let's let the 2010 reforms continue to be set in motion to see what kind of impact they have. And members, it's my judgment and the judgment clear of the distinct majority of the Pension Commission that 8.5% is not an appropriate level going forward. That's why we recommended the 8. That's why we recommended that experience studies be done to make sure that the legislature has the information in a few years as to whether or not our assumptions are good assumptions or not. And so that, I guess, Mr. Chairman and members, is what I would say in response to that question.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Lanning. I appreciate that. And there will be lots of work for a future legislature because by no means does what was done 2 years ago and what we have going to the future. My biggest concern is fairness to employees over a 40-year period of time, not just a 2-year period of time, that some don't get huge increases and others don't. Some have been zero and some have had 8, 9, 10% increases. So my goal really here is that when you have a defined benefit, that you have a stable, you can follow up with your promises, and to make sure that you're fair to all employees, and this is when you pay in, and when you get your pension, that over that 40, 50 years, there's employee fairness. So I appreciate this is one small step, But, Mr. Chairman, this answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Same members, we have rules starting up at 8:30, and with a slightly smaller agenda here in Ways and Means, I think what we'll do 8:30 or shortly thereafter is recess so that rules, which I understand will be a fairly brief committee, members can get to rules and then get back, and we won't be shuffling people back and forth. So if we can get to a vote on this bill before 8:30, that would be great. I don't want to shut down the conversation and discussion. We'll come back to it after we get back from a quick recess. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this brief. First of all, Representative Lanning Morey, great job. I know this is like herding cats. It's a very difficult issue. I won't repeat some of the same things that Representative Kiffmeyer mentioned, but I have some of the same concerns long term, and they're not partisan concerns. I've just always had a frustration over the defined benefit versus defined contribution and our ability to make promises we can keep with money we have. And for the long term, as Representative Kiffmeyer pointed out, can you help me? I'm going to end up supporting this, I think, because of the compromise and the good work you've done with it. But I have a lot of concerns long term, and I'm looking for some assurances or some comfort that a defined benefit approach is going to continue to be a fiscally viable option for Minnesota going forward, that we're not simply kicking the can down the road.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Gottwald. The experience studies will help us evaluate the wisdom of the system that we have in place and the assumptions that go along with it. We need to continue to look at defined contribution alternatives. We spent a lot of time as a commission over the last many months studying various options. We weren't able quite to get to the point where we had an option that a decisive majority of us felt was ready to go forward. I've made a commitment, as long as I'm a part of the Pension Commission, to continue that study. Members define contribution as having a few opportunities for elements of defined contribution we think could be in the best interest of employees, giving them more say, more control over the how their funds are invested and ability to move those funds as they need to. I don't see us totally going away, shifting all the way from a defined benefit to a defined contribution. And that clearly was the what came forward in the study that was done on the defined benefit program. But we need to continue to discuss and explore defined contribution alternatives, options that could be added to our system.
Representative Gottwald. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, on the same issue, I would echo some of the concerns raised by Representative Kiffmeyer and Gottwald. 8% seems high, yet was there ever a discussion of that being 7.5, 7, or some other number, and what are other states at? If we're four of the nine highest plans at 8.5%, are all the others at 8, or some lower than 8, and was there discussion about that?
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Westrum, there are a few that are down at 7%, only four funds in the country. There is one fund at 7.2, one at 7.25. There are 13 at 7.5. There are 19 at 7.75. The predominant level is 8%. There are 36 different funds around the country that are at 8%. We had one bill before us that would have dropped it to 7.5. And the feeling on the part of the commission was that we're just not ready to make that that move. That's a very substantial move and would have significantly more impact than the 8.5 or the 8. And so we felt that this was the best compromise for now. And like I said, the next few years we are going to be asking for the experience studies that will tell us whether that level is appropriate or not.
Thank you.
Representative Westrum. Representative Kahn.
one last comment. One of the things is that a defined contribution versus defined benefit has far lower administrative costs. So much more of the money then stays with the funds and stays with the workers. Other issue besides the lower administrative costs is the fact that we have gotten rid of some of those, you know, huge, like 8% going on in perpetuity. One of the real problems was the St. Paul Teachers Fund because of very bad decisions that were made when the funds were very plush. And all those things have been cut back, and they've been held up in the courts. Our decisions have been okayed by the courts, and saying that is not to cut back on a pension at that point is not the breaking of a contract. And one of the problems with dramatically cutting down that interest assumption is that that's a real, essentially, a tax increase on the employees, because you then have to dramatically increase their contributions to keep the fund at any level of solvency. And it's just silly. You want to do it if you need to, but it's silly to do it before you need to, and that's what the experience study should tell us.
Thank you, Representative Cotton. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn. And that's why it is really important to have kind of a long-term plan to step it down gradually as you go forward. It helps the actuarial studies, experience studies to have it kind of going forward. You do 5 years and you do all this work, and then it goes back. It's an assumed 8.5 and have all that. And there are those consequences. But if you do it on a very, very gradual approach, and even these numbers that Representative Lanning is saying as far as the 8% are on, there are lots and lots of states that are moving down. They're also seeing that the heydays are not necessarily there, and we need to have a real strong, stable situation. But I think in a very gradual way that helps to mitigate that.
Well, just let
members. We're okay. Gonna. I don't want to stifle a discussion, but I'm gonna. I need to recess for rules. Are you to that point, Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, just quickly, as a member of the labor wing of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, I you know, have to say this. You know, the day that we want to toss out the defined benefit plans for defined contribution plans is the day that you will hasten my quick death that I was talking about on the House floor yesterday. So, you know, we fought for defined benefits for 100 years. Keep it up, Gottwald. You're not going to be one of my pallbearers. That's
all right, members.
Why don't we pass the bill?
Seeing no more questions, Representative Lanning renews his motion to have House File 2199 as amended pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We are recessed to the call of the chair, and I'm going to say 9 o'clock. We'll plan to reconvene at 9 o'clock. Members, we are in recess. Okay, members, we'll come back to order. My apologies for underestimating the efficiency of the Rules Committee, but hopefully everybody had a nice coffee break and a chance to visit. We are back on bills here, members, and before us now, House File 1607, Representative Woodard's bill. I will move House File 1607 to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Woodard, to your bill, and I understand you do have an amendment to move as well. Would you like me to move that right away, or do you want some discussion first?
That would be great, Mr. Chair, if we could move that.
All right. I will move the RA-12-392 amendment so the bill is in the form the author prefers. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Woodard, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1607, as we heard on the floor last week, is the Capital Security or the Capital Complex Security Advisory Committee. It does two primary things. It does establish a advisory committee for capital complex security, and the second thing it does is it provides for the State Patrol to provide security services to members of the legislature, members of the constitutional officers who may be subject to a threat. The floor conversation or the floor debate turned into a discussion on data privacy, and that's the A12 amendment that Representative Holberg and Chair Westrom and I worked out. And what it does is on 4.8 takes out the language about data exchange with individuals under this paragraph is not public data. The concern was that with the private sector and public sector members of this committee, that data that would be exchanged between them in open meetings should be open data, and that's a good point, which is why we took that out. So there is a peace in the valley on the data practice piece of this, which is why it was, I believe, re-referred.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Woodard, will you explain why that line was in the bill in the first place?
Representative Woodard.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Breinert, it initially was in there because it does help facilitate the conversation. And we have, you know, the idea is that the Director of Security or the Vice President of Security for Target, if they were participating in this, may want to provide data to the committee that would be they would want to keep private because it has to do with their own security practices. But certainly the issue of data practices and data security and data privacy sort of trumps that idea.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the motivation for the change. I'm interested in whether there are advocates who will find this problematic in terms of how this will move forward.
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Breinert, actually the advocates, Rich Neumeister in particular, helped us draft the original language, and this kind of tightens it up even more, so he certainly is supportive of it. He's the primary advocate that we've worked with on this issue.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Woodard, I support your bill, and this is all fine, but I thought it might be interesting for folks to know that the troopers and security folks do provide services to constitutional officers. And so I have personal experience with that, especially serving over 9/11 and incidences after that where they received threats against me as I was going out. And not only State Patrol, but city, campus, highway, county, you name it, they are very responsive and very helpful, as they really would and should with any citizen that is in that situation or in that. So I just thought it'd be important for folks to know that. And certainly my concern here is more for the general public, and that especially as we look forward to restructuring our capital, that this is a good time for us to take a look at these things, because there may be other things for the Capitol or other structures. So just to let you know, Anna, as officers and in that regard, but I think at this time this is a good thing, and I do support it. Thank you.
Representative Woodard?
Just real quick on that, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer, for that. I could not agree more. I think our State Patrol is certainly an asset to the state. They did ask for this language to help clarify when this would be, when constitutional officers and legislators in particular, I think was the bigger issue, when that protection would occur and how that process would work. So it is a clarification of that, but you're correct. They certainly have provided that that in the past. And also it is good timing, as we discussed, with potential capital restoration.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think you just perhaps answered it. I was asking more through curiosity about the section providing protection for constitutional officers and legislators, because I think we've all observed the Highway Patrol from time to time here in the building or in some of the hearings. And my question was going to be what's changed, but apparently it's simply to clarify then. I remember during NSP Prairie Island Conference Committee, now called XL, Highway Patrol provided protection out at one of the senator's homes because he had been threatened, who was on the conference committee. So they have been doing it, but if it's just simply to clarify, that answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Seeing no more questions, Representative Woodard, any final comments?
No, I appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. So I will renew my motion for House File 1607 as amended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Woodard, for that. And you are still before us with Senate File 1678, correct? We're going to move the Senate file?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All righty, members, I will move Senate File 1678 to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. And Representative Woodard, I'm looking at a handful of amendments here. None of these are yours, correct? Is this, are any of these amendments yours, Representative Woodard?
Mr. Chair, the amendments that we had actually were kind of, we're trying to take the House file 2059 and have it conform to the Senate file 1678. So there are three amendments that I'm aware of, and those three amendments are actually incorporated in the Senate file. So two of those I was moving. Representative Champion was going to move one of those. He and I have had a conversation, and exactly what he was looking for is in the Senate file. So I think we're good on the amendments.
Great. So Senate file 1678 being before us. Any questions or discussion, members? Seeing no questions, I will renew my motion to pass Senate File 1678 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative
Thank you,
Woodard.
Chair, members.
Members, we do not have any other business before us. I have not had a chance to confer with the chair to know what our schedule might or might not be going forward here, but we'll keep you posted, and we are adjourned.